Hey, so I am Nick, and this is an experiment I am trying out of making a podcast. The working title is Institutional Design. Might change that later. And the rough plan is I'm going to be interviewing academics working in the sort of overlapping fields of algorithmic game theory, computational social choice, and mechanism design. Part of the motivation is that I really enjoy listening to podcasts or audiobooks or getting information through audio. And I'm really interested in these topics. And as far as I can tell, there isn't really a podcast in this area. So I am creating the podcast that I wish already existed for me. And hopefully there's someone else there like me who will be glad this podcast exists. So this is the first episode, very much in the learning phase. Feedback is welcome on any aspect, either the content of the interview or the technical aspects of podcast editing and audio quality, that kind of thing. Any and all feedback is welcome. And let's get on to the first episode. My guest today is Rachel Friedman. Rachel is a PhD student at UC Berkeley with the Center for Human-Compatible Artificial Intelligence, where she is advised by Professor Stuart Russell. Her research focuses on reinforcement learning and reward modeling as paths towards value-aligned AI. She's particularly interested in integrating methodologies and expertise from computer science, statistics, cognitive science, and economics to resolve the inherently interdisciplinary challenges of ensuring that AI is beneficial for humanity. Today, we will be talking about her paper, Adapting a Kidney Exchange Algorithm to Align with Human Values, published in the Journal of Artificial Intelligence in 2020. So before we get started on the paper, I was just wondering if you could tell us a bit about what got you interested in this area and the general topics that you are interested in working on.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for having me. I initially decided to work on AI because I believe it has the potential to have a pretty tremendous impact on society. And I want to help make that impact as good as possible. I got interested in kidney exchanges, which is what this project is on, specifically because that's a domain where algorithms are having a big impact on people in the present day. They decide who gets life-saving kidney transplants. So it's pretty important that those decisions are being made in a way that aligns with human values.
Can you give us a preview on what your PhD thesis is on, which I know, again, is not necessarily the same topic as what we're going to be talking about today, but just out of interest?
Yeah, sure. It's the same motivation, but a bit less domain specific. So in my thesis research, I'm working on the question that I addressed in the kidney exchange domain, but more broadly, which is how do we align AI algorithms like the ones that are allocating kidneys with human values. Specifically, I'm working on techniques like inverse reinforcement learning, which allow AI algorithms to infer what humans value through interacting with and observing us. The goal is to ensure that AI is always aligned with our values, even in domains where it's really difficult for us to formally specify in code or in mathematics exactly what those are.
Awesome. Without further ado, we'll talk about your paper. Could you start us off by just explaining how kidney exchange algorithms work, the problem that they're trying to solve, and the current solutions that are implemented before we get on to your improvements to the algorithm?
Yeah, of course. So imagine that you have kidney disease and you need a kidney transplant, and you have a friend who's willing to donate a kidney to you, but you guys are medically incompatible, like maybe they have the wrong blood type. And I'm in the same situation. I need a kidney transplant. I have a friend who's willing to donate one to me, but we're medically incompatible. But if my friend is compatible with you and your friend is compatible with me, then we can form a little cycle where my friend donates to you on the condition that your friend donates to me. And we could add a third pair to this. So my friend donates to you, your friend donates to someone else, and then their friend donates to me. And we can just make a cycle like that. So this is how kidney exchanges work. Kidney exchange is a public health system that's like a marketplace that patient donor pairs like this can enter to find other patient donor pairs to form these cycles with. And when you have a whole bunch of these pairs, forming cycles like that, it turns out, is quite computationally difficult. So we can't do it by hand. We need to use algorithms to do it. Specifically, we formulate it as a graph in computer science, where each node is a patient donor pair. And then we add an edge from one node to another if the donor of the first node is compatible with the patient of the other. So then when you form a cycle in this graph, that's a valid matching where like kidneys can flow along the edges. So then the problem of matching as many people as possible becomes the problem of finding the maximum weight cycle cover in this graph, which we already know how to do using linear programming. However, sometimes making one transplant might be favored over making another one. For example, at the time of writing the paper, I think it was preferred to give a kidney to someone who had already been part of a failed exchange than to someone else, all else equal, which seems reasonable to me. But this policy for prioritizing patients is currently decided in an ad hoc fashion by a committee. So a bunch of people get together, I think yearly, though I'm not sure, and discuss and write up a policy for this is how many bonus points you get if you've had an exchange fail, or if you're under 18, or under these other sorts of circumstances. And then people with more points are more likely to be matched. However, humanity has a pretty poor track record of deciding on a single ethical framework that we all agree on just via debate. So it's probably pretty challenging for a committee to faithfully aggregate everyone's preferences here. And ideally, whatever policy we end up using to prioritize these kidneys would take into account the preferences of the members of the community who actually might participate in the exchange. So the current system is this graph theory, linear programming system where the weights that prioritize patients are decided in an ad hoc fashion by a committee. And what we propose is improving the system by instead of learning what the weights should be based on the preferences of people who belong to the community who might participate in the kidney exchange.
Excellent. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the weights that you add, which we'll talk about what attributes you use, but they only act as a tie-breaking rule to select between graph matchings that have the same number of people.
Yeah, that's true. So sometimes there's multiple possible matchings that match the same number of people. So we want a way to break those ties in a way that aligns with our values. And so, yeah, the system that we've developed used specifically for that. And we ran a bunch of experiments in simulation and found that even though they were just breaking ties, the policy changes that we suggested still had a pretty big impact on who got matched by the algorithm. So actually what we do is we solve the ILP, the integer linear program, and then we record the number of participants that are participating in a maximum cardinality matching. And then we add that as a constraint to the ILP, that it can only produce solutions that have at least that cardinality. And because we already know that's the maximum possible cardinality, then that means that it can only give solutions that match exactly that many people. And then we rerun the program with that new constraint, but adding in the weights that we've learned from our preference learning procedure. And so the result of that is another matching that still matches the maximum possible number of participants, but uses the new weights that we've learned.
So what attributes did you select to weight different matchings by? And what was the process that you went by choosing those attributes and selecting those weights?
We put a lot of thought into this because our goal with the system was to have the final weights be determined by community participants as much as possible. So we, as experimenters and computer scientists, didn't want to sit down and say, okay, these are all the possible characteristics that people are allowed to have opinions about. We wanted to gather that information as well. So we had an initial survey where we just gathered lots of participants on Amazon Turks. So these are people who were somewhere in America, but that was all that we knew about them. And we asked them, we described to them the basic idea of kidney donations, kidney allocation. And then we asked them what sorts of patient characteristics they believe the system morally ought to take into account, and what sorts of characteristics it morally ought not to take into account. We wanted to be sure that they were going to give characteristics that were like specific and personally relevant. So we did give an example of the kind of characteristic that we were thinking about, which is age. We said, for example, if you thought that age morally ought not to be taken into account, you should write age in this column. And that's relevant because almost all the participants did then put age in one of the two columns, and we acknowledged that we primed them there. But yeah, so we asked participants with that survey and gathered a bunch of responses of lists of things that the participants thought morally ought and morally ought not to be taken into account. And then we categorized those into a few different categories. So myself and another researcher just independently categorized them into some different categories. The most commonly reported one was age, which makes sense because we kind of anchored participants on that. But to give an example, things that might go into the age category would be if someone wrote age, but also if someone wrote how old they are, or how many years they've been alive, or I don't know, other sorts of things that are basically age. The three most popular categories were age, which most of our participants thought morally ought to be taken into account, behavioral aspects of health. So these are things that people are generally perceived to have some sort of control over, like their diet, how much they exercise, how much they drink or do various drugs, and then general aspects of health. So aspects of health that are not perceived to be directly in someone's control and also aren't directly related to kidney disease. And we threw out any data that was directly related to the kidney disease because the matching and the transplantation process already has their own way of handling that. So general health would be things like how healthy they are, whether or not they have cancer, whether or not they're sick, things like that.
Excellent. Yeah, so there's a table in the paper about the different categories and what percent say ought and ought not. I found myself just silently judging the participants in your survey. It seemed to me that, so health behavior was a much more, health as in behavioral factors. So as you said, like drinking or not, was rated much higher than general health. So it seems like that the respondents were using a sort of moral heuristic of desserts, or like it's okay to punish people who made bad decisions. And yeah, I thought that was interesting. And actually, maybe connecting to another thing I want to ask you is the pros and cons of the, as you said, ad hoc committee of elite, highly educated, trained professionals making these decisions on behalf of the community compared to a more democratic, participatory process of people selecting these weights. I assume from the kind of premise of your paper that you favor the latter, but yet, what are your thoughts on the pros and cons? And if I was more sympathetic to the committee approach, what arguments would you have to persuade me I'm wrong?
We actually favor a combination of the approaches, which is what I call a hybrid approach. But regarding the top-down or committee-based approach, where a committee just decides which ethical theory is the best one by debating it and then program it into a system, and then the system always acts in accordance with that ethical theory. Pros of that are it's very interpretable. The committee is a group of humans who are going to write down in human words what ethical theory should be put into the system, and we can always refer back to that. Ideally, the committee will be well chosen to be a group of experts who know a lot about ethics and also know a lot about the domain, versus just a random person you pull off the street who may not have thought about it very much or have much background knowledge. And then the experts also will have a lot of time to think about this specific problem, ideally, and to debate each other and try to do some collaborative truth finding. Those are all pros of having a collection of experts decide on the policy to use. But there's some problems with it as well. A major one is that it's difficult to define a complete, coherent ethical theory that everyone agrees on, all of humanity. And by it's difficult, I mean that literal wars have been fought over it, and we still haven't agreed. And it can be even harder to define an ethical theory or an objective for a machine learning system that can't be misunderstood or gamed by the system in some way. And it's very difficult, especially for ethicists and designers who are writing down goals ahead of time to predict that kind of thing. So as an alternative, there's what I call the bottom-up approach, which in its purest form has you learning the moral principles entirely from human behavioral data. So the system's morality is to basically just imitate what humans do. And a strength of this is that there are a lot of common human morality and ethics that's implicit in our behavior. So things that we would have difficulty writing down in formal mathematics, but that we adhere to pretty well when we're interacting with each other, and it allows us to have a society. And this allows an AI to pick up on those sorts of things and emulate them without us having to specify them. However, if we have an AI that's just copying everything that humans are doing regarding like the moral decisions that we make, then it's also going to copy over all of the implicit biases that are implicit in our behavior. Ideally, we'd want AI that was going to be better than us, that was going to be more fair, more impartial, more consistent, that was going to be free from the biases that we have in our decision-making that we don't want to have, but have difficulty always telling when they're there and fixing them. But if all the AI is doing is copying humans, then it's just going to make the same kinds of mistakes as we do, but faster. And another challenge or con with this approach is that generalization to novel contexts is really difficult. This is analogous to the out-of-distribution problem in machine learning. If there are explicit principles, like in the top-down approach, then it's relatively easy to apply those to new domains. But if it's just learned what humans like to do in some particular context, it can be really difficult to generalize that to new domains and can lead to some unexpected or dangerous behaviors. Misgeneralization happens.
So that's interesting with the top-down versus bottom-up moral, like kind of two ways of doing moral reasoning. And yeah, I think a hybrid approach sounds like a really good way of getting the best of both worlds, hopefully.
Yeah, I see those as two ends of a spectrum rather than mutually exclusive alternatives. And then most approaches are going to live somewhere along the spectrum. And the approach that we use in this paper, which we call a hybrid approach, does live somewhere in the middle-ish.
So yeah, so that, as you said, it should definitely be more of a spectrum than a alternative between the top-down and the bottom-up. I was just more thinking about the pros and cons of the general public making the ethical, the kind of bottom-down ethical weightings versus, again, like a kind of group of experts. So like as an example, one of the categories that you didn't end up using for the weights, but that some people suggested was criminal record, and 9 said it ought to be used and 4 people said it ought not to be used. And I'm just assuming that if you polled a group of of medical ethics boards, like the types of people who are currently selected for that role, that would be extremely different. And maybe the general public is right and the ethics boards are wrong, but I definitely notice systematic differences. I'm just wondering whether you favor that kind of elite-driven bottom-up thing or a more general public democratic approach.
The key to the hybrid approach is that you need to have both. You have the bottom-up democratic approach, but then you also have top-down moderation. And exactly how you balance those two things, I think, is a key question for future work. A couple of other details. I actually thought the criminal record thing was really interesting because out of all of the categories that people proposed, that was the one that was most controversial. It had the most similar numbers of people who thought it ought to be included and ought not to be included, which is interesting. And something else that's specific to kidney exchanges is that the number of people who can be helped by them, the number of people who can be matched in the exchange, scales super linearly with the number of people who enter the exchange. So if you double the number of participants in the exchange, all else equal, you can make more than double the number of matches, which means that getting people to participate in the exchange is a really good thing if we care about people being matched and getting kidney transplants. But it's an opt-in system. So if someone needs a kidney transplant, their doctor might say, okay, you can join this waiting list. Also, if you want, there's this kidney exchange thing you can sign up for. And then they have to choose to opt in. So another way that getting members of the community who might need to participate in an exchange to participate in the way that the policy is set up, another benefit of that is that if they feel like the policy more closely represents their values, then they're probably more likely to be interested in participating in the exchange.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Whether or not the weightings are like ethically correct in some objective sense, having the views of the system more reflecting of the people participating can make participation in the system more likely. Obviously, also just PSA for this video is that organ donation is really good and saves lives, and everyone should check the opt-in to organ saving or altruistically donate a kidney, as many awesome people in the effective altruism community have done.
Computationally, it's great. If you have someone donate a kidney without a paired patient who needs to receive a kidney back, that sets off, instead of having to form a cycle, you can just form a chain, and that can set off a whole chain of donations, which really helps clear the market. Yeah, fully endorsed.
Every day I wake up thinking, oh, I hope I can clear some markets today. So just back to the experimental results. So what were the three attributes that you ended up selecting? And then what were the weights that the general public or Mechanical Turk users weighted those attributes?
Yes. So just to be clear, there were two rounds of surveys. In the first round, we asked people what characteristics they thought ought to be taken into account. And those were free response. And then we categorized them and found that there was a pretty big gap in between how often the third most popular category was reported and how often the fourth most popular category was reported. So we just took the first three categories, which were age, behavioral aspects of health, and general aspects of health. And then we designed several fictional patient profiles, where all you knew about the patient was their values on those three different characteristics. So we gave you an age for them, we told you how frequently they drink, and we told you whether or not they also had cancer. And then in the second survey, that's where we elicited participants' preferences and used them to calculate these scores that we've been referring to, which were then used to weight patients in the exchange later on.
And each attribute was artificially made binary just for computational simplicity, I assume. So for age, there was just age 30 and 70, not every possible year. And same with drinking, it was either frequent or rare, not a spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. The goal of this project overall was to develop an end-to-end methodology for identifying what characteristics people thought morally ought to be included in such a system, figuring out how they should be weighted, incorporating them into the algorithm, and seeing what the results were. So for each of those individual steps, we did a small scale proof of concept version, not something at the scale that it would need to be to actually modify the real system. So yeah, for computational reasons, we did make all these binary attributes. So age was 30 or 70. For behavioral aspects of health, we wrote that either the person had one alcoholic drink per month or they had 5 alcoholic drinks per day. So 2 pretty extreme things there.
Yeah.
And important to note that frequently drinking alcohol can increase your risk of kidney disease. So there may be some element of responsibility there. And then health-wise, either no other major health problems or skin cancer in remission, which was designed to be something that was recognizable and salient to a lot of people. We've all heard of cancer, but not immediately life-threatening. And then we gave participants pairs of patient profiles, where one example profile might be, this patient is 30 years old, has 1 alcoholic drink per month, and no other major health problems. And then the other patient has a different little description. And we asked the survey participants to imagine that they were responsible for choosing which of these 2 patients should get a kidney. And they had to choose which one the kidney should go to. We gathered data on lots of pairwise comparisons like that and used it to model underlying scores for the patients using a computational model called the Bradley-Terry model that's commonly used for pairwise comparisons like this.
Were you surprised at all by the ordering that you ended up with?
Yeah, I was mildly surprised by the extent to which participants cared about age, cared about prioritizing giving kidneys to people who were 30 years old over people who were 70. I expected to see this somewhat because 30-year-olds in expectation just have a lot more life left. And so you're saving more years of life if you give a kidney to a 30-year-old than a 70-year-old on average. But the effect was so large that the 2 patient profiles that participants had the most difficulty choosing between, where it was like really close to 50-50 when you compared them, were someone who was 30 years old, but had cancer and had 5 drinks a day, versus someone who was 70 years old, but rarely drank and didn't have cancer. Those were like really close. People had trouble choosing which one of those should be prioritized to receive a kidney, which to me indicates that weight factor is doing a lot of heavy lifting there, since all else equal, people disprefer giving a kidney to someone who also has cancer and disprefer giving a kidney to someone who drinks a lot.
So with the rankings, it makes sense that, as you would expect, that the top ranking is a 30-year-old who rarely drinks and is healthy, and the 8th or the last ranking is a 70-year-old who frequently drinks and has cancer. Back to my bad behavior heuristic, the people rank a 30-year-old who rarely drinks but has cancer in remission as higher than a 30-year-old who frequently drinks but is otherwise healthy, which again, I just thought was interesting. Again, sorry, Mechanical Turk users, I'm just judging your morality, but that's, you know, no, it's okay. So then after you got all this data from our lovable Mechanical Turk users, you then did some computer simulations. So can you tell us about those and the results that they had?
Yeah, so we simulated 5 years worth of daily matching. What that means is we had a pool of simulated patient donor pairs, and all of the patients had some sort of value for each of these characteristics. So all the patients were either old or young, drank alcohol either frequently or rarely, and either had cancer or didn't. And then the patients and donors also had assigned blood types and some other factors that determine compatibility. So then we had this pool, and within this pool, there were certain donors who were able to donate to certain other patients. And each fictional day, some participants entered the pool because they got kidney disease. Some patients left the pool because they decided they didn't want to participate or passed away. And then with the remaining participants, and then the algorithm made a matching over the remaining participants. And the remaining participants who were included in that matching were removed from the pool. And the ones that weren't included in the matching, because it's usually not possible to match all of them, stayed in the pool until the next day when more participants were added and more left and the process was repeated. So what we simulated was this process repeating every day for 5 years worth of days. And what we were evaluating was the effect of different matching algorithms. We had a matching algorithm that doesn't take any participant profiles into account, which is like the baseline. And then we had our prioritized algorithm, which prioritized matching the patients who got high scores on our Bradley-Terry model in based on the preference comparison data that we had from the participants that we surveyed.
Excellent. And I think I thought an interesting thing was how you did some adjusting the weights, or like different functions of how the weights were used. And it was mainly the rank order of the profiles that seemed to have the most of the effect. So if you used a transformation on the weightings that kept the rank order the same, it was like mostly similar, which, yeah, I thought was interesting and I wouldn't have necessarily predicted beforehand.
Yeah, I ran a number of different experiments. In the first one, we just compared unit weights, where all of the participants are weighted the same, which is equivalent to not taking their profiles into account at all, versus this prioritized algorithm that weights, say, the young participants more heavily than the older participants. And we found that the prioritized algorithm did have a pretty significant effect on who was matched. Participants who had profiles that were assigned higher scores were much more likely to be matched under the prioritized algorithm than they were under the standard algorithm. And participants who had profiles that were assigned very low scores were much less likely to be matched under the prioritized and under the standard algorithm. So that tells us that our new weights procedure is doing something. And then, as you say, we are curious what it was about these weights that was causing this difference in matching. Because of some details of how the Bradley-Terry model works, the participants that had the highest weight, their weight was like two or three orders of magnitude higher than the participant with a lower weight, which is a pretty enormous difference. And we don't think that our participants would endorse the view that saving one person of the higher ranked profile is worth saving 1,000 members of the lower ranked profile.
You never know. They seem to really hate old drinkers. And, yeah. But yeah, we can hope.
Some of them seem to, yeah. So maybe, yeah, maybe one person is worth saving 1,000 of another. But we at least didn't as researchers. So we were like, which is part of the reason why we only use these weights to break ties and not to compare different quantities of people. So we didn't want an algorithm that was going to save 1,000, save one of one person over 1,000 of another. But we did another experimental condition we did was we modified the prioritized weights so that they still had the same rank ordering. So the same profile that was preferred under the first weights was still the highest scoring one over the second set of weights, et cetera. But instead of there being that enormous factor of difference between the most popular and the least popular, we made all of the gaps in the scores between the participants tiny. So I think they varied by either 1/100 or 1,000th of a point, which is very little. So the most preferred profile was just slightly better than the second most preferred, which was just slightly better than the third most preferred, et cetera. And then we ran the algorithm, ran the simulation again using those new weights. And we got results that were pretty similar to the ones that we got when we ran with the original weights that we learned from the Bradley-Terry model, suggesting that it's the ordering of the weights, which is consistent across those two different weightings, rather than their absolute values, that was really responsible for this difference in matching.
Yeah, so another result, again, that I wouldn't necessarily have predicted before reading your paper was you have this distinction between demanded and undemanded blood types. And it seems like the undemanded blood types get totally screwed. Like their matching goes down massively if they're both an undemanded blood type and in one of the lower rankings. Whereas a demanded blood type still, even if they're low prioritized ranking, still has a decent chance at being matched. So yeah, so can you explain that? And then also, is that an ethical issue, do you think, that we end up screwing, like, it's worse to be have a undemanded blood type than to be in the prioritized, low on the prioritized ranking?
Yeah, that result was a bit surprising for us as well. And I think that points to the importance of technical researchers doing this kind of work, because it allows us to discover biases or impacts of our algorithms like that that we wouldn't have predicted ahead of time, but may have ethical ramifications. Underdemanded pairs are pairs that, because of their blood type, either their donor is very limited in the type, in the blood types of patients that they can donate to, or the patient is very limited in the types of blood types that they can receive donations from. Either one, if at least one of those things is true, then a given pair is called an underdemanded pair. And it basically means it's really difficult to match them because there's fewer matchings that are available. And what we found was that, as I said earlier, having high scoring profile greatly under the prioritized matching greatly increases the likelihood of a patient getting matched, and having a low scoring profile greatly decreases the likelihood of them getting matched. However, it turns out that this effect was felt almost entirely by the underdemanded pairs. So the pairs that aren't underdemanded, which are ones that have blood types that make them easier to match, pretty much always get matched anyway. There's a few outliers, but the percentage of them who get matched in these simulations is pretty close to 100%. The ones who sometimes or often don't get matched are the underdemanded pairs. And if everyone's weighted equally, then the underdemanded pairs on average get matched some proportion, some lowish proportion of the time, like maybe 30%. But if we incorporate these weights, then the underdemanded pairs who have really high scoring profiles, that skyrockets up to more like 70 or 80%. But the ones who have low scoring profile, that drops down to almost zero. As you say, this may have ethical ramifications, and it's an effect that we should be aware of and take into account when deciding whether or not to implement this sort of system. I don't think it's either clearly good or clearly bad. It depends on the details of the setup. Like, it could be true that a pair being underdemanded tends to correlate with some other form of societal disadvantage. And we really don't want to have a public health system that's further systematically disadvantaging individuals who are already societally disadvantaged, in which case this would clearly be a really bad thing. And good thing we noticed that this was an impact, because then we don't want to implement this algorithm.
If blood type was correlated with race, for example, which I'm not sure whether it is or not.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that, so I don't know if it's true or not. But yeah, if it was, then we would definitely want to not implement an algorithm that was going to accidentally discriminate based on race in terms of who gets a kidney.
Hey, so this is just Future Nick dropping in for a little information fact-checking interjection. So I looked it up, and it turns out that race does seem to correlate to some extent with different blood types. So for some blood types, the percentages among different races seem roughly the same, but for others, there does seem to be quite a difference. For example, the blood type B positive, for African Americans, 18%, Latin Americans, 9%, Asian Americans, 25%, and Caucasian Americans, 9%, according to the American Red Cross. Links in the description. Okay, back to the podcast.
But if it doesn't correlate with any sort of societal disadvantage factors like that, then maybe we're fine with this. Maybe we're fine with this algorithm that makes it harder for some people to get matched purely because of their blood type, but means that we tend to match more people who we value saving their lives more.
Excellent. That is time. So thank you, Rachel, so much for talking to us. And yeah, hopefully I'll have you back on at a later date to talk about more of the inverse reinforcement learning and the kind of ethical ramifications for AI systems that not just matching algorithms, but like more agent-y and interacting in the world.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a really interesting conversation and it was good to meet you.